Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Today, the latest on simple healing techniques like lemon juice or mint or oatmeal, and what can it do for us, and the dangers of that, once again, high fructose corn syrup. It's doing something different, and I'll explain what it is, and it's not good. Also, today we're going to look at Alzheimer's research and finding that a particular drink shrinks the brain. Wow. Why is that important? Because this drink is consumed by tens of millions of Americans every day. You don't want to shrink your brain, because the brain already shrinks when you're aging beyond the age of 27. And then how dark-colored veggies and fruits are the best nutrition for your money, and a lot more on health and healing. Then I want to share a commentary that it's important to me, and I'm hopeful that it will resonate with you. And it's about our silence. I certainly support the Me Too movement. I'm just very disappointed that it took a famous or well-known celebrity who had been sexually assaulted or abused or threatened or harassed to bring it to our attention. Because there was a time, believe it or not, in the United States where morals, social values, etiquette, ethics, and no means no were accepted as just part of normal character development. We didn't have to be reminded to respect one another. There were boundaries to which we knew we had no right to cross. Unless we were invited, we didn't go. There are always exceptions, but the vast majority of people respected that. That's why at any day, any time of day or evening, you could walk on any street in the United States without the fear of being mugged, raped, killed, or in any way assaulted, because there was a common social thread that held us together. It's what we held in common as a basic ethic that mattered. So when people talk about diversity, of course we should encourage diversity, but ask yourself this. Are we stronger because of our diversity, or are we stronger because of what we share in common towards common, universal truths that make us all better human beings? Otherwise, we de-evolve into individual truths, individual patterns of behavior that may not in any way reconcile with anyone else. I'll share a comment from a Peace Corps worker about that a little later on in the program. So I believe we should not be silent, not just about sexual harassment, but also on all issues pertaining to life, and I'll go into great detail about that a little later. And also, I'll be sharing a commentary from John Whitehead, a constitutional lawyer and one of America's foremost top 10 constitutional and civil rights and human rights advocates. Silence is betrayal. Get up, stand up, speak up for your rights. I certainly agree with John on that. And then today, we will play part two of how we are currently, not in the future, living in a police state. A police state that can only function because it's a part of a larger totalitarian state. A totalitarian state that came about based upon fascism, where members, not all, but members of the most powerful media and corporate interest, join with not all, but many of the members of the government agencies and form a cabal that serves their interest. And I'll explain that. So we're in that today. This is just one of the architects of the tools to do this. And William Binney, and we gave you part one, and even today in Abu Dhabi and Dubai, they're now having hover police craft. No one else in the world has this yet. It'll be there, where the police can hover over any crowd in this little, looks like a tiny little, almost about the size of a I would say a golf cart, and it can zip all over the place, much like in a sci-fi film, but it's here now, it's here today. So the police can move anywhere at any time, and it's also equipped with photo recognition, all forms of other ID. Oh, and also today, I told you this would happen. I told you 20 years ago this would happen. They now have not just a chip. It actually shows them injecting this, but it's a syringe, and they're injecting nanoparticles. And each of those nanoparticles has a specific function. We don't know what those functions are. We only know what they're telling us. Oh, this will make it easier for you to pay your bills. This is, in effect, like a convenient credit card. But instead of having to take a credit card out of your pocket and stick it in there and have it read, you just walk through. Your body automatically scans your identity. So they're putting thousands upon thousands of these nanoparticles, and it's actually millions, with a given little injection right in the hand. That means they circulate throughout the body. That's now. It's being done now. Already within 1 year, they went from chipping people in Australia to chipping employees to get into a building and get access to their computer, as if opening a door was too much of an inconvenience and turning on your computer was such labor-intensive. But what else was on those chips they implanted? You really think that that's all they did and that's why they did it for your convenience? We cannot any longer be this negligent in our ability to become willing sheep. So we are full into this. And also, like it or not, believe it or not, we're in the process of seeing a coup d'etat in the United States. Behind it is a group, probably in the neighborhood of about 30 to 40 people. At the head of that group is the Clinton dynasty. And you think, how could they get away with this? And it's now becoming unraveled. And the interesting thing is, only because Donald Trump's president, this happened. Had Trump not become elected, this wouldn't have happened. We would have never known the lies and cover-ups that these people engage in routinely. But when you're in their circle, you see how it works. I'll explain in the near future, in the next week, how this coup d'etat is manifesting, who's a part of it, how they've been working. This is not hearsay or speculation. I have too much respect for you, the audience, to give you anything less than solid evidence. But I also am seeing other people out there uncovering similar evidence. So many of us are on the same trail. So I'm going to start on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday after Health and Nutrition, which I'll be doing, the remainder of the program, about 40 minutes, to show you how they've done this from the very beginning and how along the way people were co-opted by money and the access to power and closeness to people, and how today it's probably in the neighborhood of 400,000 people. That includes 200,000 military-industrial contractors that voted for the Clinton. And remember, you're not voting for Hillary, and you didn't just vote for Bill. They're a tag team and a lethal one. But once you get into their cycle of behavior, you're rewarded. And that's how they succeeded in Little Rock. They paid off everybody. How do we know that? You're going to hear from the people that did the paying off. You're going to hear from the people that got the money and gave it to people to shut them up. You're going to hear from prosecutors, and every one of the people you're going to hear from was an official, none of whom have been interviewed by any of the major media. It's a story they won't touch, because once you open that door, everything can come out. People are still alive and well and have their memories. It is to let you know, these are the people behind the current coup. These are the people who are behind everything that's happening. They control everything. They control the media. They control corporate interest. And now they control the internet. So we can only imagine in the very near future how the internet's going to be censored even more than the censorship going on now. And I'm going to tell you about the censorship going on right now that they actually acknowledged before a congressional hearing this week. But it didn't make any news at all. So it's not conspiracy theories, it's conspiracy facts. And we're going to share them with you in a 3-day special. Let's go to health and healing. Every morning, before I go out for my workout, I have a little drink, about 16 ounces, beet juice, coconut water, lemon juice, apple cider vinegar, and ginger juice. Here's the latest on how just a few of those things can help treat acne. Now, acne is, it can have a short-term potentially long-lasting physiological condition on our body because it can leave scars, pitting, pockets on the back, shoulders, wherever it manifests, face, neck. And hormones called androgens, A-N-D-R-O-G-E-N-S, are commonly thought by science to lie at the basis of the precipitation of acne. Men and women both have it, and androgens enlarge the sebaceous glands in the skin, causing it to produce more sebum, that's oil. And the increased sebum clogs the pores and provides food for bacteria, and then androgens surge at puberty, and it's the reason why teenagers are more prone to acne than most other people. So what can we do? Well, lemon juice and rose water for acne are terrific. You apply them, just take a sterile cotton and take some lemon juice and rose water and dab it in and just wipe it gently across the face. But I would add something else. I would add 10 drops of colloidal silver. And then you put that wherever you have acne or pustules. Then let it sit for a half hour. Then simply rinse it off with cold water. Now, lemon juice is a great natural astringent, but it also kills bacteria. It's a natural antibiotic or antibacterial agent. And the rose petals, by the way, that's how they get rose water, it acts as a skin toner. And that's one of the reasons if you want to take yourself a really nice, soothing bath that's great for your skin, put rose petals. Or if you don't have rose petals, rose water into the bath. And then mint can be used also. You simply crush up some mint, the whole leaves, like a half a cup. And ideally, you have a mortar and pestle, P-E-S-T-L-E. And then you make like a little, it comes up, the mint. Just imagine what it's like for a kind of stringy pesto. That's what it looks like. And you just wipe it onto the face, let it sit for a half hour, and wash it off. And the peppermint brings relief to acne, and it contains natural menthol. So that's a natural skin anti-inflammatory. Just some natural things can help us. Also, a lot of people are still consuming high fructose corn syrup. Not good. Because now they find that it produces a toxic chemical called HMF anytime that it's heated. Well, a lot of people making all types of desserts use this even when it's heated in the sun or in bottles that are outside, which is frequently in the summertime, that creates a toxic reaction. Not good for you. Article in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry talks about why it's not good. So wherever possible, read your label and stay away from high fructose corn syrup. It can also contribute to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Also, stinging nettle. Nettle, N-E-T-T-L-E. Stinging nettle, you don't eat it because it'll burn your mouth, but you can take an extract of it. And it is so good on so many levels. It can help men who have enlarged prostates. And by the way, the entire plant is good, not just the leaves, the roots, the stem, the flowers. It has tremendous healing value. Also, even for animals that have had skin conditions. In fact, in ancient times, it was used as a diuretic and a laxative. And I see it as part of one of the strategies for cancer, even for diabetes. So just having a cup of stinging nettle tea each day is good for you. It helps headaches. You can actually, after you've boiled water with stinging nettle in it, cool it off. You can dab that on eczema. It's terrific. But as a great detoxifier, stinging nettle is good as a blood purifier and is terrific for your liver, also helps your pancreas, lowers your blood sugar level. So stinging nettle, it's terrific, especially if you have painful urination. If you have we all think of, all right, you have a bladder infection, you have some bacteria in there. Try some, of course, grapeseed extract, along with vitamin C, pal de arco, bee propolis, and cranberry juice. That's all good. But also, so is stinging nettle extract. And if you have joint problems, a stinging nettle also can help that as well. And for those of you who are diabetic or pre-diabetic and think, well, okay, I can manage it. Well, indeed you can if you do the right thing. You can even reverse it. Here's what you should understand if you're overweight, chronically overweight, or you're pre-diabetic or diabetic. You're reducing your brain function. That is serious. Quote from a study on this topic. This study reinforces previous evidence which suggests that poorly controlled diabetes affects the functioning of the brain. We already know that type 2 diabetes increases the risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, which is a type of dementia, and this research adds another piece to a very complex jigsaw puzzle. So, what you don't want is you don't want your brain to be adversely affected. But if you end up with any blurred vision or dizziness, or elevated heart rate, fatigue, sweating, weakness, those are some of the signs of diabetes that may not be recognized otherwise in pre-diabetic conditions. But now add harming your brain and leading to cognitive decline as another set of the problems. Also, Alzheimer's researchers, this is according to Science Daily, find high-protein diet shrinks the brain. So one of the main concerns we have is how to heal a brain of a person with dementia or Alzheimer's or any other neurological condition. And one of the many reasons to pick a low-calorie, low-fat diet and moderate, even low in protein, and that would be your plant-based diet, a healthy vegan diet, is because study after study after study has shown that that diet delays the onset and progression of Alzheimer's disease. In fact, I'm working now with a couple, he 93, and we have already in just 3 months seen remarkable improvement in him and using these techniques. In fact, the first day he had that Alzheimer's stare. It's just like staring off in space, looking right through you and not connecting with what you're saying. Now, according to his wife yesterday, he is alert. He's able to have conversations in complete sentences. He is able to laugh and tell jokes. He is exercising. He's sticking 100% with the protocol. And he has more energy. He is able to stand upright instead of walking with a cane. And he's finding things that give him joy and pleasure in life. So that's a major, major improvement. Mind you, he had advanced in stage Alzheimer's, and at 93, no easy task, but he's making regular improvement. But also he's on a moderate to low-protein diet and a strictly vegan diet? Well, according to the journal Molecular Neurodegeneration, tests the effects of several diets head-to-head for their effects on Alzheimer's disease pathology in this particular laboratory experiment. And although the researchers were focused on triggers for brain plaque formation, they also found that unexpectedly a high protein diet led to a smaller brain. The research team included people in the United Kingdom, Canada, and the United States, and this really surprised them. So you don't want a high protein diet, and yet I grew up believing that a high protein diet was a healthy diet. I didn't know anything. I was from West Virginia, and I was an athlete, and we worked out in a gym every day, which was, we had no YMCA in my hometown. We had no boys club in my hometown. And we had a friend who said, well, use my garage. Now, he never stepped foot in the garage, at least not when we were there. So we went in, we cleaned out his garage, and all of us brought gym equipment, and we chipped in. We bought everything that you would need in a gym, and it was a small gym. It's a garage, two-car garage. But about six of us worked out in there every day, and I've got some early photographs from when I was 17 and powerlifting, not bodybuilding. We only did powerlifting, meaning we built a lot of bulk muscle, could deadlift almost 500 pounds. We were strong, and I was the smallest guy in there, 236 pounds. No fat, all muscle. The big guys, 285, almost 300 pounds, all muscle. But what was their key? High protein. Now, Big Tom Brock, he would eat as many as 12 hamburgers at a time. I saw him do it. I saw him put away two whole fried chickens once. So I would take non-fat dry milk and scoop up a bunch. I'm assuming I was on about 200 grams of protein a day. And I was tired a lot. I shouldn't have been. And it was only when I came to New York City and no longer had buddies to work out with and started doing my running in the park, to which I was stopped twice by the police in Central Park. Nobody was running when I was first in the city and running. I mean, you could go a whole day and I'll see three people. I just went out early one morning, and I guess it was the earliness that surprised them. In any case, two things happened. First, a puffiness under my eyes went, mucus went, and I dropped weight. I went from 236 all muscle, 28-inch waist, down to 190 pounds, which is my normal weight. And unless I would start training for marathon, then I dropped down weight again. But I learned that way, and only later, when I began to get into the sciences and dietetic sciences, did I realize we're way over-consuming protein. In fact, even a lot of vegetarians and vegans eat too much protein. You do need good quality plant protein that's more easily assimilated into the body as amino acids than meat or dairy or eggs or fish or chicken. But don't overdo it. 9/10 of a gram per kilogram of body weight per day. Just to give you an idea what that is, you're looking at, if you're an average size woman, maybe 5'5", 5'6", you're looking at about 40 grams a day. If you're pregnant, it's more. If you're healing, it's more. Nursing, it's more. If you're a man, let's say you're 5'10", 160 pounds, you're looking at about 50 to 60 grams a day. If you're a taller person, more athletic, using more energy, burning more muscle, maybe 70 grams a day. Rarely do I see anyone who needs more than 80. And yet it's very common for football players and athletes to load up on protein when they should have been loading up on complex carbohydrate. That's what your body needs. That's what gives it glycogen and backup, and they're not using it. And finally, from the times of India, they're showing how dark-colored vegetables and fruits are the best buys. A professor at the University of Washington showcased the Affordable Nutrition Index at the American Dietetic Association. And they said that if you want to get the most nutritious foods that are rich in fiber and iron and calcium and protein and potassium, magnesium and the vitamins, that doesn't have all the added sugars or sodium, go towards your collard fruits and vegetables, raspberries and strawberries, and red peppers and yellow peppers, and carrots, and blueberries, and grapes, and purple plums. That's where you get your best nutrition at the lowest price. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. We're going to hear from William Binney about the police state that we're in now that is completely acceptable, not by me, but other people, yes, and it shouldn't be, and how that impacts us and what we should know about it. But before we go there, I want to share my concerns. I believe that we should be standing up, joining together, anytime we see that there has been some egregious, immoral, unethical, illegal activity by corporations, politicians, departments like Department of Justice, the FBI. If we do not stand up, then one day nobody's standing up. And we just allow things to happen to us. Drilling in the Arctic, drilling off all the shores of America. What could possibly go wrong with that? Having oil pipelines cut across America underneath lakes and rivers. We've already seen the consequences of that. And they pride themselves in how many rules and regulations they have been able to eliminate. And that is not good for us. But also asset forfeiture, profiling people based upon their ethnicity. In different neighborhoods. You never see a single person profiled in Greenwich, Connecticut in a rich neighborhood, nor down on Wall Street. You never see police waiting outside Goldman Sachs or J.P. Morgan Chase and waiting for the employees to come out, and the executives in particular to come out and say, okay, up against the wall, empty out your pockets. You never see it outside of Broadway plays at night. But boy, you sure do. Over 500,000 stop and searches. And so one day it all becomes normal. We don't care anymore. It was Pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer who was executed by the Nazis for participating in the German resistance movement. Here's what he said. We have been silent witnesses of evil deeds. We have been drenched by many storms. We have learnt the arts of equivocation and pretense. Experience has made us suspicious of others and kept us from being truthful and open. Intolerable conflicts have worn us down, even made us cynical. Are we still of any use? What shall we need? Not more geniuses or cynics or misanthropes or clever tacticians, but plain, honest, straightforward men and women. Will our inward power of resistance be strong enough, our honesty with ourselves remorseless enough, for us to find our way back to simplicity and straightforwardness? Now that was said back in the Nazi occupation. I am, John Whitehead is, I hope you are. Are we finally tired of liars, scoundrels, cheats, sociopaths, psychopaths? I'm sick of the circus politics, the sex scandals, and the partisan hypocrisy. I'm sick of people engaging in an industry like Hollywood or the fashion industry. Oh, that's just as bad. I know that up front and real close because I was in a long-time relationship with one of the most beautiful and talented and wonderful and vivacious human beings I've ever met. She was one of the world's top models. Athletic, brilliant, creative, intellectual, funny. And you couldn't offend her no matter what you did because she laughed at everything. It's one of the reasons all my buddies liked her from West Virginia. As much as they could use in a politically incorrect humor, she would double down on them. And isn't it wonderful to be around someone that you can laugh all the time without ever thought of, well, did I say something inappropriate? Hey, if we had to stop listening to humor about ourselves, then nobody would be allowed to give us humor anymore. You wouldn't have Richard Pryor today. He would be politically incorrect. Monty Python wouldn't be able to be on television today because of their social satirizing. We've taken ourselves too seriously on too many levels. But I cannot tell you how many people, men and women in the fashion industry, I help get off drugs and alcohol, and how many of them have been sexually harassed or abused by people in the industry. And if you think that's a bad industry, and it is, then you have no idea how bad the music industry is. In fact, there's a very, how can I put this without identifying the person? There is one of the most famous performers ever. We're talking about Grammy and platinum. And in all of this person's official biographies, it mentions where they came from and then getting into New York, leaves out a place, leaves out a 2-year period. Well, that person would have a whole different a bio if you only knew what that person was engaged in, where they were at, how I interceded, stopped what was going on, got that person out, called a friend of mine, got them a contract, and they spent about 5 months detoxing before they went into their new public persona. So I knew an awful lot about people in the recording industry. You have no idea how many famous musicians I've helped get detoxed and what they talk about the industry and the groupies. And so it's all the same, whether it's music, whether it's fashion, whether it's Hollywood, whether it's television, whether it's corporate boardrooms or office politics, we have been permeated with the idea that somehow those in power or those seeking power are complicit in sexualizing everything and disqualifying appropriate moral and ethical respect for the other. But that's for another conversation. I'm just sick of that becoming the only thing that we can be offended by. Why don't we have a Me Too for the homelessness in America? How many homeless are there? At least 30 million. But they officially only count those in shelters. And very few people go to shelters. A, there are too few shelters, and B, most people don't like that environment. They'd rather be on the streets or couch surfing. Why aren't we offended? Why don't we have a Me Too for the hungry children? Isn't that a noble cause? Feeding 16 million hungry children? And what about the 2.5 million homeless children who get out of school each day and don't have a home, a warm home, a loving home to go home to? Their home may be the street. Their home may be a van or a car. Why don't we have a Me Too movement for all the people who are victims of conflict and war? There are over 40 million of them. You see, to be really outraged by one indiscretion should not limit us, but by equal measure, by being outraged by all indiscretions that adversely affect people. I've reached the limits of my tolerance for individuals who have bartered their morality and consciousness and integrity and religious beliefs and liberty for political, economic, or celebrity gain. And please do not with me. Others, you can get away with it. Me, you can't get away with anything. Don't tell me that every single person that somehow has been victimized is completely innocent. A lot of people participate in their own destructive pathologies. Yet we want to believe that every alcoholic, every drug addict, everyone in prison, everyone who's been abused somehow is innocent. Most are not. But that is for another discussion. How do we help people, even those who do not want our help, when helping them help themselves would help society? I believe we should be at a point where we say enough already. This is not a reality show. This is not an experiment in political theories or a contest over who generates the biggest laughs or the highest ratings or the best polling numbers. Enough with the deafening silence in the face of outright corruption and base immorality and denigrating language and demoralizing greed and abject cruelty and derision and cynicism and violence and oppression and tyranny. And by the way, Lady Gaga, man, why don't you just stop long enough to realize how pathetic you have become? I posted a photo on my website of a beautiful, loving little white fox. And the photo below it is you wearing that dead fox. And another is you wearing a meat dress. Ask yourself this. Why are you so insecure? You have some talent. You graduated from Juilliard. You have some skills. Now think of the people that did not graduate from Juilliard. Think of Lena Horne and Judy Garland and Ella Fitzgerald and Diana Washington and Billie Holiday. Think of the people who had to go through the same challenges you do today, who could walk out on a stage and did not need 16 naked guys or nearly naked dancing around in lights and cameras and actions, all to focus upon you and the uniqueness of you and loving you. They could just walk out and by themselves with nothing. They could hold everyone in the cusp of their energy. So could Frank Sinatra and so many others. You and Madonna, man, you are so similar. And that you think you're so different. And not just is the problem with you, but with the people who think that somehow that's special. It isn't. The United States today is run by a cabal of racist, classist. What we have is the deep state, the controllers, the financiers, the war hawks. All of them want to bring us to the brink of madness and destruction. They want us in a state of civil unrest. They want the riots and the mob violence and the political discord and the state of panic. They want us to fight each other and be incapable of taking a united stand against tyranny. They want us silent. They want us subservient. We have been silent too long. We have been silent for all the wrong reasons. We have been silent when the universe demanded that we get up, stand up, and speak out. There comes a time when silence is betrayal. And that's what Martin Luther King Jr. said. But we ignored King's warning about the triple evils of poverty, racism, and militarism. And look where it's gotten us. Mounting national debt, impoverished communities, racial unrest, endless wars abroad, and a military-industrial complex that has turned its greedy sights on America. We can no longer afford to ignore the warnings about where this is all leading. The clock is ticking down to where those who have will be forced to isolate those who have not. And hence the beginning of what I've been predicting for a long time. Green zones, safe, wonderful, beautiful, la-la, air kisses, everybody's ha-ha, and hoity-hoity. And the rest, Mad Maxville. Remember that dystopian Pentagon training video being used to prepare armed forces to solve future domestic, political, and social problems? It's only 5 minutes long, but the military training video says a lot about the government's mindset, the way it views the citizenry, and the so-called problems that the military must be prepared to address in the near future, which includes criminal networks, illicit economies, decentralized syndicates of crime, substandard infrastructure, religious and ethnic tensions, impoverishment, economic inequality, protests, slums, open landfills, overburdened sewers and a growing mass of unemployed, the Pentagon is anticipating that all hell's going to break loose within the next 12 years. We can no longer afford to pretend that we are just playing a game. The stakes are too high. But right now we have the idea that winner takes all and the losers lose their lives. This is the American life today. And we're all in this together, like it or not. So better come to grips with your own individual ideologies and your own individual separatism. Even in the left community, they're the easiest to get to gouge out each other's eyes so that nobody sees. Wow, what dystopian mindsets. They're an embarrassment. So what are we going to do about it? I think it's time that we approach these topics more mindfully and start to engage in real social activism where we are the object of that change, where we become vegans and we write letters and we protest. There's one program on television that dwarfs all the programs on television in how it faces the issues of the day. You can agree or disagree. There are things I agree, things I disagree. Tucker Carlson. At least he has the honesty not to pretend to be something he is not, and he invites people on with completely disparate views, and he challenges them and they challenge him. He's a good debater. He does his homework. He does his homework on the wrong side of an issue sometimes, but at least he allows people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to come on and talk about vaccines. Kennedy said there's only two programs he was ever been invited on. Well, I had him on talking about those views. And we can't even have an open civil conversation on the legitimacy of vaccines being mandated as a health issue. For those of us who've done our homework, done 15,000 hours of research, and there's at least 20 of us who've done that, we've come to the decision that no vaccine has been shown to be safe or effective by any gold standard, and look at the consequences. You can't have that debate. There's legions, armies of trolls and doctors and scientists who are there being paid to attack anyone, any parent, any scientist, any doctor who questions the vaccine paradigm. It would only be on a Tucker Carlson that a debate and a discussion of the real issues could be allowed. Otherwise, all forms in radio and television are closed circuits. They only allow on what aligns with their own political and ideological and financial rationale. But this coming Sunday, 7:30, we're going to wake the world up. This is going to be one power show that you will not want to miss, and I want you to share it with everyone you know. Even today as we speak, we're finishing up a major new article on the politics and profits. Who gets the money? Who's behind all this in vaccines? The program is called Deadly Deception. It's 2.5 hours long. It'll start at 7:30, followed by 8 guests from around the world, outstanding people talking about the pain, profit, and politics of vaccinations. Go to prn.fm, progressiveradionetwork.com, if you want to join us Sunday evening, and then share the information. Now let's look at some health issues in a little more depth. This is from Green Med Info, the research group, and it talks about 5 reasons never to take a proton pump inhibitor. Why? Because millions of doses of acid-blocking proton pump inhibitor drugs are doled out every year. Yet most doctors and their patients are completely oblivious to their unintended adverse effects, which include increased risk for premature death. Now, the proton pump inhibitors are a type of drug commonly known as acid blockers, whose primary purpose is to reduce the amount of gastric acid secreted in the stomach wall. And it's available with or without a prescription. And acid blockers are used to treat common disorders such as indigestion and heartburn and acid reflux and various ulcers. And these type of digestive disturbances are so common that the proton pump inhibitors, or PPIs, were prescribed at nearly 270 million hospital trips made by adults via ambulance from 2006 to 2010, just 4 years. And the standard American diet, you know, sugar-laden, highly acidic processed foods, meat, chicken, fried foods, pizzas, plus add in a stress-filled lifestyle that accompanies it, makes it easy to swallow the fact that these PPI drugs are among the most highly prescribed drugs on the planet. And by the way, economically, the boost these drugs represent to pharmaceutical companies cannot be overstated. With cumulative sales of more than $10 billion a year annually, drugs like Nexium, Prilosec, Prevacid, and others represent a significant chunk of Big Pharma's profits. Despite clinical research that shows an act as simple as drinking more water, that's it, drink more water, reduce stomach acid, and they're more effective than these drugs, and they're safe. These drugs are not. Now, here's the latest from GreenMed Info. Quote, the most commonly reported short-term side effects of taking these drugs are digestive disturbances such as nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, constipation, abdominal pain, and gas, headaches, fever or cold symptoms such as stuffy nose, sneezing, and sore throat, skin rashes, cognitive impairment, and infection. So, you've seen the commercials, I'm sure that. You've seen the commercials where someone wants to eat something and suddenly it smacks them and people think, oh, how cute. And then they take that acid blocker and immediately relief. That's not a good thing. The reason stomach is in your system is to digest food so it can become available in the form of nutrients. So this is adversely impacting all that, and it's not good. It also increases the risk of kidney disease. That's correct. The evidence for these proton pump inhibitors are damaging the spleen and kidneys, and that first appeared in case reports of acute interstitial nephritis, inflammation of the tissues between renal tubules that affect how our kidneys regulate and uptake water. And that condition can lead to kidney failure, and also it increases your risk of heart disease. That's correct. There is now a significant body of evidence demonstrating the adverse cardiovascular effects of these drugs. In fact, just last year, an article published in the American Journal of Cardiovascular Drugs reviewed available information on the drugs that stop the hyperacidification in our stomach and said that, wow, really bad for your heart. And you create all kinds of digestive disorders like and you end up with diminished brain function. It actually increases your susceptibility to cognitive disorders and Alzheimer's disease. And then finally, it increases your risk of death. It's very clear from the evidence, as well as common sense, that these drugs have a systemic effect on the entire body, not just the small function that they are prescribed to adjust in the stomach. So don't take these drugs. I mean, they're really going to hurt you. Also, just want to mention that a new study from UCLA describes the structure of herpes virus and its link to Kaposi sarcoma. And this description answers important questions about how virus spreads and provides a potential roadmap for the development of antiviral approaches. But I know when I was counseling so many thousands of people with AIDS-defining illnesses, Kaposi sarcoma was one of the most common and most deadly. And almost universally, after we looked at extensive blood tests, we would do viral panels, and they frequently came up with herpes and herpes 6, plus they would come up with Epstein-Barr, frequently hepatitis. And now we see that there's an association with this UCLA study. I just found that without it being linked in the literature, I would just say, well, you not only are you infected with HIV, you've got all these other viruses. Let's work on all these viruses. So we put them on antiviral protocols, natural antiviral protocols, and over about 16 months, we could knock out almost all those viruses in their system and get them back to good health. Finally, after all these years, decades, it's come back. And that's a good thing. In the final segment of our program today, I'm going to take on several issues, including environmental issues. And this is from Ben Simon, and it's about the last 3 years are the hottest on record. This is from Janina, AFP. Quote, the last 3 years were the hottest on record, the United Nations Weather Agency said yesterday, citing fresh global data underscoring the dramatic warming of the planet. So that's really not good. So for those who are still living in denial, wake up. It's happening. And it's real. And this is from Dar Jamel from Truthdig. He says, administration of denial, Trump's shock and awe attack on the environment. Quote, it's no secret that Donald Trump, someone who would never be mistaken for an intelligent, caring person, does not believe in anthropogenic climate disruption. We're all familiar with his tweet from 2012 that stated, quote, the concept of global warming was created by and for the Chinese in order to make U.S. manufacturing non-competitive, end quote. Wow. Fast forward to early 2018. Trump is now president of the United States, and a climate disruption-driven Arctic cold front recently engulfed vast swaths of the United States. Well, taking a page out of the fossil fuel industry's propaganda playbook, Trump tweeted in late December, quote, in the East, it could be the coldest New York Eve on record. Perhaps we could use a little bit of that good old global warming that our country, but not other countries, was going to pay trillions of dollars to protect against bundle up. Well, during the first year of his presidency, Donald Trump and his fossil fuel backers have filled key positions in his administration with deniers, climate change deniers, and their war against scientists and government administrations tasked with dealing with global warming impacts have been one of shock and awe. Rex Tillerson had been CEO of ExxonMobil for a decade when he accepted the post of Secretary of State. Tillerson, who famously dodged questions about Exxon's role in sowing doubt about global warming during his confirmation hearings, has stated that our ability to predict the impact of CO2 is having on the atmosphere is very limited. Mike Pence, Trump's vice president, has called global warming a myth. He also voted twice against limiting greenhouse gas emissions. Scott Pruitt, Trump's EPA administrator, refused to link global warming to CO2 emissions. He was, of course, rabidly opposed to the Environmental Protection Agency itself during his tenure as Oklahoma Attorney General. Pruitt even said he intended to form a team, quote, independent experts to challenge well-established climate science because he claimed the subject has not yet undergone a robust, meaningful debate. Thousands of emails released in early months of the Trump administration revealed the longstanding and very close relationship Pruitt has maintained with the oil and gas industry. Moreover, it has been known for a long time that Pruitt has maintained a secretive alliance with the polluters. And then there is Energy Secretary Rick Perry, who denies humans are the cause of global warming. Meanwhile, another more recent addition to his group is climate denier and Oklahoma Representative Jim Bridenstine, who has blamed global warming on the sun. Believe it or not, this is incredible. But he did. He said, oh, it's the sun. No, it's not. And now he is a nominee to head NASA, an agency that spends nearly 10% of its budget on monitoring the Earth and its climate. It's worth noting that echoing Trump's position, Bridenstine has even implied that one day of snow disproved decades-long global warming. And along those lines, we also have Trump's nominee for the Council on Environmental Quality, Kathleen Harnett White, who has been a longtime outspoken climate change denier. She is called climate science kind of paganism, secular elites, and claims that excess carbon emissions are beneficial and good for plant growth. She has even claimed that the United Nations efforts to reduce global CO2 emissions are actually a secret attempt to create what she has called a one-world state ruled by planetary managers. These are simply a few of the highlights of those who have been tasked with entrenching climate change denial across the spectrum of the U.S. government under his administration. So, within moments of Trump's inauguration as president, references to climate change were erased from the official White House website. And since then, the generalized scrubbing of all things climate change and global warming has become the norm across various federal agency websites, from the National Institutes of Health to the EPA and the Environmental Data and Governance Initiative, a watchdog group that monitors such things, commented to Mother Jones on these actions, quote, "What has happened is a significant and systemic shift in ways that certain types of information and messages are presented on federal websites." Well, how do I look at this? It's simple. I see an entire administration that is in denial. And why? Are they intellectually incapable of understanding the science or speaking with science in such a way they can be, let's say, tutored in what is global warming? How does it impact us? What is the likely outcome? Nope, these people are not scholars. They're not patient. They're very impatient. They're impulsive. And once they have a belief that something doesn't exist like global warming, they're like a dog with a bone. They're not going to give it up. So that means that when they head an agency, they are the doorkeepers of everything coming in or going out of that agency. That's why lots of scientists at the EPA have quit, and other agencies as well, because we now have the dubious distinction of having climate change denialism running through the entire rank and file of most federal agencies. That is not good for those who want to do something positive and now to stop many of the tipping points from devastating the planet and quality of our life for millions of people. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen in today. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day, everyone.